the patient awake?
No, she's a two-year-old that's fallen down the stairs. She's unconscious. They can't wake her up.
It is a parent's duty to ensure the safety and well-being of their child. This includes exercising the utmost caution when it comes to welcoming people into the home. Unfortunately, however, some parents put their own needs before the safety of their children. And in Haverford West, Pembrokeshire, Wales, in July of 2020, a disturbing incident highlighted this harsh reality. Lola James was born in Haverford West to parents Dan and Sinead James on the 30th of September 2017. She had two half-siblings, an older one born in 2014 and a younger one born in 2019. Despite the challenges that come with being a middle child, Lola's personality shone through. She was known for her bubbly and cheerful demeanour and loved staying up late to watch her favourite movie, Frozen. Grandmother Nicola recalled how she gave the best hugs and had a beautiful singing voice. She loved making up dances on the spot, especially to Rihanna's song Diamonds. Her mischievous never failed to put a smile on everybody's face, and she loved playing with her dolls. Her happy place was outside, where she loved keeping an eye out for bees and butterflies. Her father, Dan, said of her, "Her laugh would fill the room with pure joy." Unfortunately, the relationship between Dan and Sinead wasn't to last, and Sinead began to date another man named Stephen Harris, who didn't treat her very well. In January of 2020, the family was visited by a health visitor, Leslie Steedman, who raised concerns about the home's cluttered and dirty conditions. Lola appeared to be unkempt, and she had dirty feet. Sinead raised concerns over Lola's tantrums. She shared her belief that her young daughter may have ADHD and said that she often threw items at her and behaved difficult. Leslie had concerns about Sinead's ability to stay on top of home conditions, and she offered her support. Leslie agreed to make another visit, which came in February. This was the last time that Leslie saw Sinead and Lola face to face due to the coronavirus lockdown. She had attempted a few more appointments afterwards, but Sinead never picked up the phone and she ignored any letters that were sent out. Sinead had also sought help from Wendy Rodriguez, a team manager at Pembrokeshire Council's childcare assessment team. She had to complete interventions as part of a protection plan that included the Freedom Programme, which offered support and guidance for victims of domestic abuse and to help them recognise domestic abusers in the future. By this stage, Sinead had broken up with Stephen, and she met a new man over Facebook, Kyle Bevan. The duo struck up a relationship, and within just weeks, he had moved into the family home on Princess Royal Way. On the morning of the 17th of July 2020, a 999 call came in from a woman named Alison Bevan. She was Kyle's mother, and she reported that her son had informed her that Lola had fallen down the stairs and was unconscious.
The patient awake?
No, she's a two-year-old that's fallen down the stairs. She's unconscious. They can't wake her up.
Okay, tell me exactly what's happened.
A two-year-old, she's got ADHD, she's fallen from top to bottom of the stairs. They can't wake her up, and then she's bit the end of her tongue because they're not sure if she's fitted, but she's floppy, they can't wake her up.
And you're not with a patient now?
I'm not with a patient. They've just rang me because I've got credit on my phone to ring an ambulance now, they said.
They can ring credit, they don't need credit to ring an ambulance.
Okay. Oh, they panicked, I think, so...
And when did this happen?
This morning. I don't know the exact time. It must have just happened because the child...
What caused the fall?
The child woke up and she's fallen down the stairs, apparently.
So, is there any serious bleeding?
No, it's just a massive lump on the head.
Kyle had told his mother that he had been awake all night watching UFC videos on YouTube when he saw Lola was awake in the early morning hours. He said that he went to make some coffee when he saw her standing at the top of the stairs. Kyle said he asked Lola whether she wanted some cereal, and she said yes. He recalled, "I could hear footsteps on the ceiling upstairs, and the next thing I heard was two or three massive bangs, boom, boom, boom." He said that he ran out to find Lola had been knocked down the stairs by the family's American bulldog, Jesse. He stated, "I thought she was out cold. I waited to see if she came around. I knew I shouldn't have. I realized she was snoring, and that's choking on your tongue. I put my hands in her mouth and a sheet for her to chew on so she wouldn't chew her tongue. A bit of her tongue had come off, a bit of chunk at the end." Shortly after Allison's phone call, another phone call came in to police from Lola's mother, Sinead.
Okay, is the patient awake?
No, she's not.
She's not awake. Okay, tell me exactly what's happened there.
Tell my partner, because I was in bed. He was up with me.
Okay.
She's fallen down the stairs, she has.
Right, okay.
From the top of the stairs to the bottom, and her whole head's all swollen, and she bit the top of her tongue off or something.
Okay. Okay. How old is she?
2. I thought he's actually got the chunk in his hand.
Okay. So, just to confirm, is she conscious?
Is she conscious? I don't even... Yeah, she's conscious. She's breathing.
She's conscious.
She's just sleeping. Can you go sit with her, please?
So, does she wake up when you respond, when you try and wake her?
She, like, moves when I try to wake up. Her eyes are all swollen and all.
Okay.
I'm really scared.
Okay. How far did she fall?
From the top of the stairs down to the bottom.
Okay. What caused the fall?
This bloody dog that I had, it barged her and she just fell.
Okay. Is there any serious bleeding?
Kyle, is there any serious bleeding? Is there any serious bleeding? No.
Okay.
It's just bruising in her head also and her eyes.
Okay. Stay on the line and tell you exactly what to do next. Do not move her unless she's in danger and do not splint any injuries. Can I take her name?
Yeah, it's Lola James. Don't move it.
With sirens blazing, paramedics rushed to the family's home, where they found Lola motionless on the sofa. Curiously, she appeared to be soaking wet. Lola was rushed to Withy Bush General Hospital, and while doctors were tending to her, Kyle was becoming agitated and hostile towards Dr. Nicola Drake. She asked him some pretty generic questions about what happened to Lola, and he demanded to know whether the answers he gave would be confidential or not. If what had happened to Lola was an accident, then why would it matter if his answers were confidential? Dr. Drake replied that she had a statutory duty and that his answers were to be shared with external agencies, such as social services. At one stage, Kyle became threatening and shouted at Dr. Drake, "If you take one step out of this room with those notes, I'll rip them out of your hands." Dr. Drake feared for her life. She stood up and said to Kyle that the police were going to be called, to which he replied, "Ha, police." Back in the emergency room, it was discovered that Lola had sustained a number of brutal injuries, including bruises to her face, body, limbs, and even puncture wounds to her forehead. The most fatal injury, however, was a catastrophic head injury. She had sustained a total of 101 external injuries, including damage to both of her eyes. The doctors liken Lola's injuries to the kind they would see in people involved in high-speed car crashes or falls from great heights. They said that they were in no way consistent with an accidental fall, like was claimed. Dr. Deborah Stalker, consultant paediatrician, said that the injuries to Lola's brain and eyes were explained by abusive head trauma, which would include violent shaking. Lola bore all the hallmarks of an abused child, and the police were immediately contacted by staff at the hospital. Meanwhile, Lola was transported to Noah's Ark Children's Hospital in Cardiff. Detectives returned to the family home to analyse it and speak with Kyle. He told the same story that he had said before, that Lola had been knocked down the stairs by the dog.
She probably weighs more than a little one. So,
that's what I mean, she took it flying. Like. Mm. I didn't want to harm the dog, but I was furious. I could have killed it. That's the only thing, I'll be honest, if you're partially responsible for, is the fact that I was making a bowl of cereal and I was swimming. But I was making hair bread, the girls back.
Upon entering the home, detectives were immediately taken aback by how messy it was. There were toys, clutter, and food all throughout the home, as well as plates, cups, and cutlery. There were used nappies and clothing littering every single floor. Lola's bedroom was in the same condition. Her bed had a grubby duvet cover that was stained with urine and crusted. However, in the bathroom, the bathtub had been scrubbed clean. It stood in a stark contrast to the rest of the home. Detectives continued searching the home, and hidden in the corner of the living room, they found Lola's wet and vomit and blood-stained grey onesie. In the washing machine, they found curtains and a sheet. The findings were very ominous, and suggested that not all was right in the family's household. As they continued in their search at the home, Kyle and Sinead were texting one another. Kyle said that police suspected both him and her of harming Lola. Sinead responded that he needed to calm down, and the police were just doing their job. When it became apparent to Kyle that police were indeed suspicious of his claims, he texted Sinead, "They're doing an investigation into harm to the child," and then made some reference about how police can manipulate children. Sometime later, Kyle texted Sinead once more, "We haven't hurt that girl. They can see that." Sinead replied, "They can do whatever they want. They can do their jobs and I'll even let them do it. She's my princess." Kyle responded, telling Sinead he tried everything to bring Lola back around. He said that he would never hurt Lola, before adding, "Neither would you. I know, babe. Lola loves you. And she's got a love-hate thing with me, lol." Back at the hospital, doctors continued to work on Lola. And while this was ongoing, Kyle messaged Sinead that they needed to tell police the same story. He asked, "Well, what are you going to say?" "Sinead, this is important, like." Sinead replied, "What you told me." Kyle responded, "Yeah, obviously, but you gotta get it bang on, like. Sinead, for fuck's sake, like." Sinead texted back, "Well, I am saying exactly what you told me. I can remember what you said from word to word." Detectives strongly believed that the family home was a crime scene, and they informed Sinead that they were boarding it up to prevent contamination. In a clear display of a lack of emotion, Kyle texted Sinead, "How are we both going to go to sleep and chill later?" However, neither Kyle nor Sinead had to worry about that. At 4:30 p.m. they were both arrested on suspicion of assault and neglect. At the police station, they were both interviewed. Kyle described Lola as accident-prone and said to detectives, "She's a nutcase, an idiot. We're testing her for ADHD and autism. She's got no fear, man. She always falls and smacks her face or lacks awareness. It always happens to her, and she's too small-like." He referenced a bruise on her nose and commented, "She's only two and she's made of steel, man. That bruise on her nose was healing very well. I've seen adults healing not so quickly. Fair play to her, like." At first, Sinead did stick to the same story that Kyle had told her, that Lola had been knocked down the stairs by their dog. However, in a later interview, she added something else. She said that after she went to sleep the night before, she heard a loud bang and a scream about midnight. She got up and saw Kyle in Lola's bedroom. Kyle said to her, "I've got this." And as Sinead said to detectives, she didn't want to cause a scene, so she simply went back to sleep. When Kyle was informed of this, he first of all denied it, before saying that was when he was changing Lola's bedsheets, and she fell from the ladder of her bunk bed onto the floor. 4 days later, Lola died at hospital. Her autopsy was performed by Dr. Stephen Ledbetter, who listed her cause of death as subdural hematoma and swelling of the brain. He disputed Kyle's claims that Lola's injuries were caused by falling down the stairs. He stated, "I do not consider that the account given to date of how Lola James came to be injured can be regarded as a complete explanation for the findings on her body. I cannot accept that the totality of injuries has arisen from a fall down the stairs." In the wake of Lola's death, her father, Dan Thomas, released a statement through police which read in part, "From the first time I met my beautiful daughter, Lola Patricia James, my heart was filled with such joy, a happiness I'd never felt before, an unconditional love, a need to always protect her for the rest of her life. Not in a million years did I think her life would be snatched away from her in such a cruel way. All the things she never had a chance to learn, see or say, and all the things I will never have a chance to teach her, to write her name, ride a bike or drive a car. Lola, you have left a hole in the heart of everyone you met." Dan also thanked all of the staff at the hospital for their hard work in attempting to save Lola's life. His mother, Nicola James, followed suit and provided her own tribute for Lola. She too thanked all of the staff at the hospital and thanked the community for their support. The family now had the heartbreaking task of arranging Lola's funeral. It took place at St. David and St. Patrick's Church. Following the service, the hearse travelled through Milford Haven before travelling to Captain James Hill through Front Street and North Road, and then across Marble Hall to Thornton Cemetery where she was buried. The family had asked the public to clap, cheer or release a balloon as the hearse passed through, in celebration of Lola's short life. Unfortunately, Lola's family couldn't afford a headstone, but Dan and his partner launched a fundraiser on GoFundMe, which quickly reached its £7,000 goal. There were a handful of pushbacks in the case due to the coronavirus. Both Kyle and Sinead were granted bail while the investigation was ongoing, but in April of 2022, they were both rearrested. Kyle was charged with the murder of Lola, while Sinead was charged with causing or allowing her death. Sinead was expected to get bail, but it was decided she would be remanded in custody for her own safety. They both pleaded not guilty to the charges against them, and both denied that they had harmed Lola. According to Sinead, she was asleep when the injury was sustained, and her defence attorney, David Elias, said, "She had no reason to believe Kyle Bevan would behave in a way that he is alleged towards Lola." Sinead was then released on conditional bail, and shortly thereafter it was decided that she and Kyle should stand trial together, and it was scheduled for March of 2023. While both Kyle and Sinead vehemently denied any wrongdoing, an investigation uncovered the disturbing truth about Lola's home environment. The relationship between the couple was tumultuous, characterised by Kyle's aggressive outbursts that only worsened as the relationship progressed. His temper was amplified by his regular use of controlled substances, especially amphetamines. Both Sinead and Kyle were on benefits, but instead of searching for a job or spending the benefits on necessities, they spent it mostly on alcohol and drugs. When Sinead was away from the home, She left Lola in Kyle's care, and their Facebook messages highlighted the tumultuous relationship. In one message, Kyle wrote, "Come get your fucking child. You're being a fucking asshole, Sinead. Sly as fuck. I'm not bothering anymore." In another message, Sinead was angry that Kyle had seemingly kept Lola up into the early morning hours. She wrote, "What's up with you? She needs to be in bed. It's 4 a.m. Kyle responded, "It was one fucking night, Sinead. She was falling asleep while playing, and I was going to carry her up. I wanted to give her a cuddle to sleep, but you fucked it up." Their conversations over time exposed a disturbing pattern of injuries to Lola. On the 10th of April 2020, Kyle messaged Sinead to say that Lola had suffered a bloody nose while he was in a different room. He commented that it could have been worse, and he hoped that the injury would teach Lola not to play on the stairs. Around a week later, Kyle sent Sinead a photograph of Lola with a grazed chin, and he referred to her as a crazy kid and said that she had fallen over. On the 19th of April, he messaged Sinead again, writing, "She smashed her face again. I've said about them stairs and leaving toys at the bottom of them loads of times. If that jar would have smashed, she'd never look the same again." Then on the 4th of May, Kyle told Sinead that Lola had cut her lip. He said that she had fallen off her bed and bit her lip when he had gone into her bedroom after hearing her crying. He wrote, "Then when I was trying to help her because she was bleeding, she was making a stupid noise and kicking right off you, spitting at me and making a horrible noise. The whole thing upset me a bit. I only wanted to help her. I feel useless, and I feel like you don't trust me at all anymore." It was clear from the messages that something sinister was happening inside the family's home, and Sinead must have had her suspicions. Despite this, Sinead continued to keep Lola in that environment, exposing her to a significant risk of violence at the hands of Kyle. In fact, Sinead had called her daughter all kinds of horrible names in the messages between her and Kyle. She had referred to Lola as a pain in the arse, a terror, and a little bitch. In another message Sinead wrote to Kyle, "I've told everyone there's something not right with her." Kyle responded, "Lola's a challenge, but not a bad kid. Lola will learn, babe, but she won't learn without routine. It worked with me." Did you know that hurricane season is fast approaching, which means it's time to prepare now? Hurricane Ida's impact on the Gulf Coast serves as a stark reminder of the devastation it can cause. Countless homes were destroyed, leaving numerous people without access to essential resources such as food and clean water. Millions experienced prolonged power outages, enduring weeks without electricity. The subsequent flooding resulted in road damage, hindering grocery stores from replenishing their supplies. To ensure your readiness, consider obtaining emergency food kits from 4 Patriots. These kits are hand-packed in the United States and boast of a shelf life of up to 25 years. They offer a diverse selection of breakfasts, lunches, and dinners to meet your dietary needs. While these survival food kits are crucial during natural disasters such as hurricanes, their significance extends far beyond such events. In today's world, characterized by uncertain supply chains and unpredictable emergencies, having a backup plan is more crucial than ever. And right now, you can go to 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including their emergency food supply kits designed to last up to 25 years. Just head on over to 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology to get 10% off your first purchase of 4 Patriots Survival Food. That is 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology. Other people outside of the family recognize signs of possible abuse. According to Casey Morgan, who is a friend of Sinead, she had noticed bruises to Lola's leg when she was playing in the park in early July, and had later noticed that she had a nose injury and bruises to her eyes when she was on a video call. Sinead told her that Lola had fallen off the sofa and onto the coffee table. Casey never liked Kyle, and she believed that he was controlling towards Sinead. Controlling, he certainly was. He had moved into the family home quickly and had taken Sinead's house key and her debit cards. He often locked her out of the home and invited other people around. Casey also knew that Kyle often took amphetamines and other controlled drugs and drank heavily. She commented, "I didn't like him. I made that clear to Sinead. I told her to get rid of him and that I didn't want him around my house or my kids." When Kyle was on drugs, he would fly into rages and trash the family's home. Lola began to stay regularly with Casey or with Kyle's mother, Nicola, when Kyle was on drugs. On occasion, Casey witnessed Kyle being verbally abusive towards Sinead and said that when Lola stayed over, she cried that she didn't want to go home. Casey said of the family's home, "It was dirty and horrible. Lola didn't want to go home. She was screaming she didn't want to go home." In early July, Sinead had asked to come over to Casey's home, but Kyle arrived before her. She described how he was foaming at the mouth and his pupils were dilated. She recalled, "He was aggressive and it was really scary." That day, Sinead admitted to Casey and her partner that Kyle had threatened to rape her that morning. Casey said, "From that day, I knew something bad was going to happen. I told her that if she didn't get rid of him, he was going to hurt her." On the 9th of July, Sinead and Kyle brought Lola to Casey's home. Casey's grandmother, Elle Fair Morgan, was there at the time. They were in the kitchen, and Sinead asked them to look at Lola's nose because she was worried that it was broken. Lola stood in front of them, and her nose was purple with a dark bruise. Elfair then noticed that there were bruises to Lola's neck that looked as though somebody had grabbed her around the neck. Elfair suggested that Lola be seen by a doctor, but Kyle replied, "We don't need to do that." Sinead then butted in and said that they had already sought medical advice. Elfair thought that it was strange that Kyle said one thing while Sinead said another, but it was left at that. Sinead, Kyle and Lola left, but later that evening they returned when Casey was alone. Casey told them that they needed to take Lola to A&E, but Kyle responded that his mother was a nurse and that she said it was okay. Casey described Lola as being withdrawn and upset and not her normal bubbly self. Casey's former partner, Mark John, had observed injuries to Lola as well in the weeks leading up to her death. He had seen that she had a black eye and was told by Kyle that it had been caused by the dog knocking her off the sofa. The home that the family lived in was unkempt. Every single room was covered in clutter, toys, food and clothing. John James, Sinead's cousin, had even warned her that they needed to tidy the place up or they risked social services becoming involved. Kyle was furious with the suggestion. As Sean recalled, he became aggravated and began swearing. I believe he was pacing back and forth. On the night of the 16th of July 2020, Sinead went to bed, leaving Lola downstairs with Kyle. The evening appeared to be off to a relatively normal start, based on evidence found on Kyle's mobile phone. He took pictures of Lola awake and conscious, and had made searches on his phone for Roblox. Then at 4:26 a.m. the next morning, he took pictures of Lola where red marks could be seen on her body, although she was still awake and conscious. Then at 6:18 a.m. he googled amazing 3D tattoos. But then at 6:32 a.m. he googled child and head injuries. One search term was, "My two-year-old has just taken a bang to the head and has gone all limp and snoring. What's wrong?" His search history also included a visit to the website healthchildren.org and specifically looked up loss of consciousness. At 6:39 a.m., Kyle took two more pictures of Lola, where insignificant swelling could be seen to her head. He called and messaged his mother, Alison, who's a healthcare worker. When she awoke to the messages, she told Kyle he needed to wake up Sinead and get Lola to hospital because she could have a concussion or a bleed on the brain. After the messages, Kyle got out his mobile phone and hit the record button as he tried to prop Lola up. Her body was limp and her head was evidently swollen. He lifted up Lola, who was unresponsive, and tried to place her on her feet to get her to stand up. He then let her go and a thud could be heard as Lola fell to the ground. Kyle then placed Lola on the sofa, where she could be heard making a snoring sound. He could be heard commenting, "She's gone, she's gone." Kyle then sent this 22-second recording to his mother, Alison. She told him that he needed to call an ambulance immediately because she could have a bleed on the brain. He waited a further 30 minutes before once more contacting his mother and asking her to phone an ambulance. He claimed that his phone couldn't make calls. At 7:29 a.m., Alison called 999 and said she was calling because her son didn't have credit. It was around this time that Kyle finally woke Sinead up. He woke her up and said that Lola had fallen down the stairs. Disturbingly, he presented her with a piece of Lola's tongue that she had bitten off at some stage. Sinead recalled, "Lola was on the sofa and her head was swollen, and her lips. Kyle told me she fell down the stairs. He said the dog pushed her and barged her." Just 1 minute after, Alison called 999, so did Sinead. She was audibly upset as she told them that her daughter had taken a fall down the stairs and that she was breathing but not responding. When paramedics arrived and transported Lola to the hospital, Alison texted her son to tell him that he had done nothing wrong and that he needed to stay calm as Sinead needed him. Other family members arrived at the home as they were made aware of the unfolding situation. Inside, they were all taken back by the state of the family's home. Sinead's aunt, Linda Hughes, commented on the possibility of social services becoming involved because of the situation. She recalled, "Kyle turned and became really aggressive. It was something along the lines of, 'Don't you fucking come in here after what I've just gone through.'" While Kyle was in an aggressive mood, Sinead was said to be hysterical and crying, and begging him to calm down. Linda said, "He was there wanting to be a big man, wanting to shout and argue." After Kyle was arrested, he was asked why it had taken him so long to ring an ambulance. He responded, "I had to stop her chewing on her tongue, put her on the sofa, put her clothes on and put the dog out. I sat next to her and prayed, really." Kyle was then asked why he didn't wake Sinead up. He replied, "I didn't want her to wake up with a dead child, but the inevitable happened anyway. I thought she was going to come around." The detective then asked Kyle why he didn't go to a neighbour for some help since he claimed he couldn't call 999. He responded, "It was 5 a.m. Tracy, the neighbour, would have punched my head in, mate." The detective then asked, "5 a.m? Did you need to get help at 5 a.m? Kyle replied that he was just making a point that it was early. Over in the other interrogation room, Sinead was telling detectives how Lola had 2 left feet and how Kyle was amazing with her. She denied that he was ever abusive towards her, despite the fact she was constantly harmed when he was alone with her. She said to detectives, "She's got 2 left feet. She's hyperactive. I've been telling the health visitor there's something wrong with her, and she needs to be tested for ADHD and autism. She constantly slips and falls over, literally, and gets up and smiles and laughs. She tries to jump off walls and I need to grab her. I wish I was awake and wish I could have stopped it and helped her. I wish I was there for her. And I didn't know. I wish I could have been there." Sinead was then confronted by detectives who said, "Every time your children get injured, it's always Kyle around. Why is that?" As detectives had learned, Sinead's youngest daughter had been harmed when she was being cared for by Kyle as well. She too had allegedly hit her head on the coffee table and had also allegedly been knocked over by the dog. The detective said to Sinead, "You've got three kids there under the age of 10. They're at risk." Sinead replied, "I know, I'm horrified." The detective then said, "It's happened when Kyle has been around the children, but you failed to do anything about that, haven't you? Your children are getting harmed." Sinead then proceeded to say that Kyle took a bomb of amphetamines once a week, smoked cannabis every day, and took Xanax two or three times and said it made him go off his head. She said that he had hit her lamp, punched her walls, and then took a hammer to the light switch. She was then asked whether she allowed Kyle to take drugs in the house with the children present, and she replied that he wasn't allowed to take it in front of her children, but instead, in another room or outside. While Sinead denied that Kyle had abused her, detectives presented a text message from her to Kyle in which she said, "You've been abusing me. Get out now. I'll ring the police if you carry on." She admitted that when Kyle blamed their dog for a lot of the injuries to the children, she had never once seen their dog knock the children over or jump at them. Sinead soon enough changed her tune, and she admitted to detectives that Kyle was controlling. She further said that he refused to comply with a Clare's Law request for information, which discloses whether a partner has an abusive past. He had said to Sinead, "I don't have to give it to you. They won't find anything on me." Despite the fact that he had refused to comply, Sinead still welcomed him into her home and entrusted him to care for her children. She said to detectives, "I'm too scared to leave him. I don't like confrontation. I don't like intimidation. I'm petrified. I really am. I'm scared he'll whack me and Lola, and I will have no one then." Sinead then admitted that over the course of her relationship with Kyle, she had begun taking amphetamines as well. She maintained that she hadn't taken any for a week when Lola was killed. She said, "I used to drink more. I never used to take drugs at all until I got with Kyle. I was dead against drugs and didn't drink as much as I was with Kyle." She was asked why she drank more and she responded, "I don't know, peer pressure, because he was drinking and I thought I may as well drink with him." The atmosphere at Swansea Crown Court was tense on the 8th of March 2023, as Lola's loved ones arrived at the beginning of the trial. During opening statements, prosecutor Caroline Rees said that Kyle had subjected Lola to a brutal assault while he was alone with her between the evening of the 16th of July and the morning of the 17th of July. She told the jury how he claimed he had found Lola at the bottom of the staircase, after the family dog Jessie had knocked her down the stairs. She then gave an overview of the case the prosecution had built, including the disturbing video of Lola after the brutal attack that cost her life. Prosecutor Rees said, "Again, the prosecution asked the question, if this really was an accident, why was Kyle Bevan spending time staging a recording like this rather than doing everything he could to contact the emergency services?" She then focused on the dirty home, which stood in stark contrast to the spotless bathtub. She also spoke about the blood and vomit-soaked onesie that was found, and said it was evident that after Lola was beaten, Kyle had attempted to cover up his actions by putting Lola in the bathtub to clean off any blood and vomit, and then hiding her stained onesie. He then attempted to conceal the fact he had done this by scrubbing the bath. This theory was further bolstered by the fact that when Lola came to hospital, temporary tattoos that she had been wearing had been scrubbed off. The prosecutor stated, "We say that, rather than face up to what he did to that little girl, Kyle Bevan immediately tried to save himself." She further said that it was the prosecution's case that the injuries sustained by Lola were inconsistent with an accidental injury, and instead, the result of a frenzied, brutal and violent attack at the hands of somebody she should have been able to trust. Prosecutor Reese then said that the jury accepted the claims that Sinead was asleep when the injuries were caused, but said that she must have been aware of the threat that Kyle posed to Lola due to the previous incidents against her. She stated, "We do say that she was, or at least should have been, well aware of the risk of violence which Kyle Bevan posed to her child, but she did nothing to protect Lola from the danger which he presented, instead choosing to prioritise her relationship with him over her own daughter's physical safety." Sinead's friend, Casey Morgan, was among the first witnesses to testify. She told the courtroom about the tumultuous relationship between Kyle and Sinead, and said that she had tried to encourage Sinead to leave him. She said that Sinead repeatedly called her for help when Kyle was on one of his benders and smashed up the home. Kyle's mother, Allison, also testified. She said that her son had been diagnosed with ADHD when he was 6 years old, and then described him as a bit thick. She told the court that she knew of one instance where Kyle had grabbed Sinead's arm and she kicked him out. She testified about the photographs and the video that Kyle had sent her that morning and said, "I could kick myself, and that's what I've got to live with for the rest of my life. I should have acted quicker." She then revealed that she never actually watched the video which Kyle had sent, telling the jury, "I was too frightened to watch it. I was worried in case that poor child had passed away and he was trying to do something with her." The prosecution then presented Facebook messages to further solidify the abusive nature of Kyle and Sinead's relationship. There were text messages between Sinead and Kyle's former girlfriend's mother, who warned her that Kyle was a danger to children. The previous owner of Jesse, the American Bulldog that the family owned, testified next. Coral Barker said that Jesse had never been aggressive with her four children and described her as a nanny dog that loved cuddles and kisses. However, she revealed that Jesse had been put to sleep a couple of months before the trial because she allegedly injured somebody. Ian Summons, a consultant pediatric ophthalmologist, testified next. He said to the jury that he found multiple spots of blood behind Lola's eyes, and said it was his belief that such an injury would be impossible from falling out of a bunk bed or falling down the stairs. He said, "The most likely cause of her injuries is a form of abusive head trauma, possibly with some kind of impact." Neuroradiologist Dr. Neil Stutley agreed. He said that the area of bleeding in which Lola's brain was found in between the dura layer, which is closer to the skull, and the arachnoid, which is the next layer down. He said that in a normally healthy person, nothing would be found between these two layers. He said that the injury had been caused recently, and said that it wouldn't have been caused by an accidental fall. There was further testimony regarding Lola's injuries. The jury were told that her brain injuries were most likely caused by shaking. There were also gripping injuries to her neck and bruising to her ears, which is rarely the result of an accident. The jury also heard that there were injuries to Lola's back and legs that looked as though they had been caused by three or four blows with some kind of a weapon. Dr. Deborah Stalker, a pediatrician, said, "An extensive subdural hemorrhage is usually the result of a high-velocity road traffic collision, where a child is thrown from the collision or a fall from a great height, such as a fall from a balcony or bedroom window of more than 10 feet. The very severe and extensive injuries on Lola are not explained by a fall down domestic stairs. The most likely cause, in my opinion, is non-accidental injury, purposefully inflicted injury, or physical abuse. The three terms are synonymous." Sinead was then called as a prosecution witness, and she described to the jury how Kyle had smashed up their home with a hammer after taking drugs. She said that she took the girls to Casey's home, and the following day, Kyle was allegedly ashamed and agreed not to take drugs in the home anymore. She said to the jury that Kyle had never acted violently towards her or her children, except for one occasion when he grabbed her arm and left a bruise. She claimed that he was really good with the children, and that she was never worried about him hurting them. She stated, "He would cook dinner for them and do things for them. He liked buying them lots of stuff that they didn't need, but he just wanted to treat them. However, in the same breath, Sinead then recalled an incident wherein Kyle pushed their buggy into the road with Lola's sister in it and shouted, "Fuck it." Sinead then took the jury through the morning. Lola was fatally injured and said, "If I had got him out of the house, my daughter would still be alive today. I've got to live with that every single day." She then added that Kyle was a monster who needed to rot in hell. She also said that if Lola had fallen down the stairs, she would have heard it as she slept with her bedroom door open, and it was right beside the stairs. Under cross-examination, Prosecutor Reese said to Sinead, "You took no steps to check Kyle Bevan was safe to have in your house. You let this man who was a virtual stranger stay at your house." Sinead replied, "You don't expect someone to kill your child. I didn't let him kill my child." The prosecutor responded, "You saw his anger. You saw he was unpredictable. You saw him push your baby into the road." Sinead replied, "I didn't think he'd hurt my children despite the fact he pushed my buggy onto the road." During closing arguments, Prosecutor Reese stated, "On July 16, 2020, Lola James, a beautiful, bright little girl, went to bed without, according to her mother, a bump, bruise or scrape on her body, apart from a bruise to her nose. At 6:32 a.m. the next morning, Lola was battered, scratched and heavily bruised from head to toe. She was in the care of Kyle Bevan, as Sinead James slept upstairs." She said that Lola's extensive injuries were the result of blunt force trauma and forceful shaking. She suggested that Lola must have rendered unconscious early in the attack, since Sinead was not woken. She said to the jury, "Every single expert concluded Lola's injuries were non-accidental, not consistent with a fall down the stairs. This was a deliberate assault and not an accident." She said that if Lola had indeed received her injuries during an accident, then Kyle should have immediately called 999. She stated, "We say Kyle Bevan needed that hour to concoct lies to protect himself. He needed that time to cover his tracks." She then turned her attention to Sinead and said that although she had sympathy for Sinead losing her child and having a history of being a victim of domestic abuse, she should have protected her daughter. She stated, "She knew, or at the very least ought to have known, that at the time of Lola's death, Kyle Bevan posed a significant risk in causing Lola harm. Despite all the facts, Sinead James takes no reasonable steps to protect her children, including Lola, from the risks posed by Kyle Bevan. Sinead James had been educated in responses to domestic violence situations and the impact on children. She had been given advice about bringing adults into the home, but she ignored them. This is someone who has been given every opportunity to make better decisions, but has failed to do so." Sinead's defense attorney, David Elias, said that never in a million years did his client think that anything bad would have happened to Lola. He said she awoke to every parent's worst nightmare, and that she had no clue what had happened. He said, "Sinead James has spent her life as a mother, dealing with abusive men and protecting her children. She's always done that, as they are her world. With the hindsight she has now, she is always going to blame herself for what happened to Lola. But that doesn't make her guilty of this offence." As for Kyle's defence attorney, John Hipkin, he said he admitted that Kyle had character failures and issues with drugs. He then added, "But does that make him a child murderer?" He suggested that Casey's testimony was biased, simply because she didn't like Kyle, and she admitted to that. He said that Kyle still stuck to the same story, that Lola was pushed down the stairs by the dog. The jury were then sent off to deliberate, and after 10 hours they returned with a verdict. They found Kyle Bevan guilty of murder and Sinead James guilty of causing or allowing her daughter's death. After the verdict, Lola's father, Dan, paid tribute to her in a statement that was read aloud by his family liaison officer.
"On behalf of Daniel Thomas, father of Lola James, The pain and grief I feel every time I close my eyes and see your perfect little face is unbearable. The pain I feel thinking of all the smiles you gave to me and that all the smiles I won't get a chance to give back to you hurts so much. Even to say your name shatters my heart to know you can't hear my voice anymore. The only reason I can stand here today is for hope that you can see me, see that you are loved and that you deserve to live a full, happy, safe life, surrounded by the joy that you gave to others. I'm so sorry your short life was filled with so much pain. You are so loved, Lola, and so missed every single day. A great team with much passion has worked together for the day since you've left us. A special thanks to the investigation team for not leaving any question unanswered or stone unturned, and to my family support officers for keeping me focused and guiding me through the darkest hours, along with my closest friends and family. The outcome here will never stop the hurt you felt or the hurt that lives inside of me. It's been a long time coming to see justice, and I can only pray that these cruel, evil people that hurt you and allowed you to be hurt suffer pain and torment until they take their last breath.
The sentencing phase was to follow, and Dan provided a victim impact statement, which highlighted his grief all too well. It read in part, "Lola won't have another birthday, or ride a bike, or listen to her favourite story. She won't sing her favourite songs, and I will never get to meet my daughter as a teenager or a woman. All I have left are memories of a beautiful baby and dreams of the child she can never become." He said that Lola didn't just die. She was taken away from him in the worst way possible, and that she never stood a chance. Defense attorney Hipkin did not offer any personal mitigation in behalf of his client. The judge then addressed the couple.
"That night, the night of the 16th to 17th of July, Sinead James was woken at midnight by a bang, followed by Lola screaming. She got up and saw Kyle Bevan holding Lola by her bed. But when he said, 'I've got this,' she just went away. She did not go into Lola's bedroom or have a proper look at what had happened. She went back to her own bed and left Lola alone with Kyle while she slept. During that night, he carried out the further attacks on Lola, which killed her. By 4:26 a.m., Kyle had Lola downstairs and was photographing injuries he had inflicted on her back. By 6:30 a.m., he had inflicted a total of over 100 visible injuries all over her body. Some of them were caused by a weapon, although the weapon used was not recovered or identified. They included injuries to Lola's right thigh with circular elements in a linear pattern caused by a weapon, and bleeding puncture wounds to her forehead, also caused by a weapon. Kyle Bevan hit the side of Lola's head with such force that it caused ear bruising and subdural bleeding in her skull on that side. He shook her head backwards and forwards so violently that she lost consciousness and died from brain damage."
Kyle was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 28 years, while Sinead was sentenced to just 6 years in prison. Lola James's short life was marked by squalor and chaos. Her mother, who should have been her protector, made a grave mistake by welcoming a man she met on Facebook into their home in just a few short weeks. Kyle Bevan was allowed to indulge in alcohol and drugs, despite young children being present in the home. This perilous situation culminated with Lola paying the ultimate price. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. And I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my newest supporter up on Patreon, Ariel. If you'd like to support the show up on Patreon, in exchange, you get ad-free and early release episodes, bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus that aren't on the regular podcast platforms, behind the scenes, which includes bonus audio, video, and case files. And I also send out a handwritten thank you card, along with some cool merch. If you'd like to support the show in another way, could you please consider leaving me a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you're listening. It's a super easy way to support a show that you like, and I genuinely do appreciate the feedback and support. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.